Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity of giving my talk here at the Isaac Newton Institute. My title is a little bit long. This is related to how to extract the degree of freedom responsible for confinement. This talk is based on the collaborations done with these collaborators. As you know, the fundamental theory of strong interaction is QCD. However, the fundamental degree of freedom, Koch and Gluon, never been observed in experiment. This is simply because only the color single combination called hadron and gluon can be observed. So, the schematically, the method is represented like this, as Koch and anti-Koch is connected by the string of glue, and if a glue string is closed in this combination, this will be expected to give a schematic view of the glue ball. So, natural question to ask is why the color confinement occurs to realize these situations, and what is the mechanism for confinement is my main motivation of this research. So, from this point of view, the promising idea was proposed long ago in 1970 by Nam, Butov, Mandelstam, Polyakov, and others. This is called a dual superconductor picture for co-confinement. This is based on the electromagnetic duality of the ordinary superconductor. In this picture, in this scenario, the QC vacuum is regarded as a dual superconductor. As you know, in the usual superconductivity, the magnetic field is squeezed into the tube-like region due to the Meissner effect caused by the condensation of Cooper pairs. So you get the linear potential between magnetic charge and anti-magnetic charge, like this. So we expect that a similar thing occurs in the QCD. Here, the quark and the anti-quark is connected by the string-like configuration of color electric flux. This will be caused by the dual Meissner effect caused by the condensation of magnetic monopole. This is a fundamental scenario, our basic idea of dual superconductivity. This idea is very interesting and intuitive appearing. However, it is rather difficult to make this idea in the precise form, since we must answer in the naive answer the following naive questions. How to extract the abelian part responsible for dual superconductivity from the non-abelian gauge theory? Yamil theory and the QCD is a non-abelian gauge theory. So we must give some machinery to extract the abelian part responsible for dual superconductivity. But this must be done carefully. Without losing characteristic features of the non-abelian gauge theory, for example, the asymmetric freedom. The second question is how to define the magnetic monopole, which is expected to be condensed in Yamil theory to cause the dual superconductivity. As you know, the Yamil theory has no fundamental scalar field in the beginning, so it is rather different from the Georgia-Grassio model in which the top Polyakov monopole appears. So, related to these questions, there are many works done related to this idea, and this was partially solved by the crucial idea called abelian projection proposed by Toft. So, let me explain briefly what is abelian projection and why the magnetic monopole appears in this method. So, first, consider the Yamil theory with a gauge group G on a d-dimensional space-time. Let chi be a real algebra value functional of the Yamil field. Suppose the chi transforms according to the adjoint representation according to the gauge transformations, like this. Then, consider to diagonalize Hermitian chi by a suitable unitary matrices, like this. This is the eigenvalue, the diagonal form. This is actually related to the kind of gauge fixing. Since chi is a gauge dependent, not gauging bound quantity, to take this form is equivalent to take some kind of gauge fixing. This is actually the partial gauge fixing, since this is because the at non-degenerate point of the eigenvalue, the gauge group G is partially fixed. Namely, this is the part of this is fixed and leaving the subgroup unfixed. For the SUN group, this unfixed part is the maximum torus group and the discrete wide group corresponding to the permutation of the eigenvalues related to the exchange or permutation of the Lie-algebra basis. And on the other hand, at the degenerate point of eigenvalue like this, the magnetic monopole appears in the diagonal part of non-abelian gauge potential. This is the idea of abelian projection, how to realize magnetic monopole in Yang-Mu theory without fundamental scalar field in the beginning. So the SUN non-abelian gauge field is reduced to the maximal torus abelian gauge group and plus electrically charged matter field and magnetic monopole degrees of freedom. This is the idea of abelian projections. I'll show you how this is realized. For example, for non-degenerate points, this form, this form, the diagonal form with phase factor, two phase factors, does not change the diagonal form. So this implies there is a residual U1 symmetry. Since we are considering SUN case, this condition is equivalent to this. So the only one degree of freedom is independent. Then consider the Calton decomposition of the SU2 gauge potential like this using this basis. This is the Calton subalgebra. And we introduce the complex of diagonal Groom parts. Then you can have this decomposition. This is the Calton decomposition. Then gauge transform this field by the Calton subgroup. Then you will get this result. This result implies that the diagonal part transform like the abelian gauge field with respect to the residual U1 gauge symmetries. And the other of diagonal part in the complex form transform like a charged matter field like this. Now we move to the degenerate point. Consider the for simplicity the Hermitian and Schwarzschild matrices like this. This is Lie algebra values. Then the eigenvalue of this quantity is obtained like this. This is a mathematical exercise. So you see the degenerate point like this is obtained only when the old component of chi vanishes. And you see at this point magnetic monopole appears. This is explained as follows. Expand this quantity chi around the zero. Then you will get these expansions around x0, the degenerate point of the eigenvalues. Then we want to obtain the gauge transformation, realizing this situation, the diagonalizing matrix U. The U, the SU2 element, is expressed by using Euler angle like this in general. You see, you find that this diagonal matrix U is realized by choosing this, namely the alpha and beta, the Euler angle agrees with the polar coordinates. Then the singularity appears in the gauge transformed gauge potential in this part, the pure gauge part, since we assume that the original gauge field has no singularity, so the singularity appears in the pure gauge part. Then you will get these expressions by substituting the Euler angle, the identification in the as we shown in the previous slide. The D equals 3 case is more transparent since this part includes this part in the diagonal part. This is exactly coincides with the gauge potential of the Dirac magnetic monopole. So to specify the magnetic monopole as the zero of the chi, we have the zero-dimensional point defect in three dimensions. So we have three conditions in three-dimensional space. The topological object is zero-dimensional. This corresponds to the magnetic monopole, point-like magnetic monopole. And for four-dimensional case, we have a one-dimensional line defect. This will correspond to the magnetic monopole loop. This is a closed string, closed magnetic string. However, to realize this idea in the actual treatment, for example, in numerical simulations, more efficient method is to take the maximum Laveran gauge. So I didn't specify which chi is suitable for realizing this idea. This corresponds to the special choice of the chi. This is called the maximum Laveran gauge. I will show you some recent result, the surprising result of obtained the maximum Laveran gauge related to core confinements. As you know, the Wilson loop is expected to behave like this, showing the air decay law for all gauge coupling. This is shown in the lattice simulation. Of course, no one has proved this in the analytical way, but this is expected for realizing core confinements. And if you take the maximum Laveran gauge in the lattice gauge theory and then calculate this quantity called the Laveran projected Wilson loop according to this decomposition, this is the diagonal part proportional to the diagonal Pauli matrices. This is called the off-diagonal part. Small gray runs from 1 and 2, the off-diagonal components. Then you define the Laveran Wilson loop. This, in the usual, the Laveran quantity, so we don't expect this has an area law. However, in the maximum Laveran gauge, in the Young-Mills theory, you see this result is obtained, the area law for all gauge coupling in this gauge. The maximum Laveran gauge is unusual in the since this is a nonlinear gauge. This is a continuum form. This is a nonlinear gauge fixing in the background of diagonal gauge potential for the off diagonal gluons. The surprising result is that this string tension obtained from the Laveran Wilson loop reproduces almost all the non-Laveran string tension expected for the non-Laveran Wilson loop. This is called the Laveran dominance. This was discovered on the lattice numerical simulation.
What about trace? Because if you put trace of, say, sigma c, right? If you compare with 1.
Sigma c?
I mean, it was a trace there, right?
No trace here.
Right. And I'm trying to substitute your AC into first in the above formula, right? Then I still have a trace of sigma c and trace, for example, in if you expand it, then in the linear term, trace of sigma c equals 0, right?
I think it's treating no, it would be just a sum.
No.
It would be just the sum of this construct you get because sigma c is upstairs.
It's e to the I sigma 3 times.
No, then it would be cos. No, it would then be. Then all odd terms would disappear because trace of sigma c is 0.
It's e to the I sigma 3 times kappa. So this is a diagonal matrix, e to the I kappa over 2 in the first entry. The average of one diagonal is e to the minus the area. The average of the other diagonal is e to the minus.
Then it's cosine if you add that up. Then it's
no,
what
no, the I's go away after the averaging, it becomes e to the minus area.
There's an average.
No, I mean, substitute explicit A3. Compare A3 to be small. Okay, then you can see that in the linear term, it's not what you are saying. Because you have first term is 1, the next term proportional to sigma c, okay?
I'm not protecting it, I'm just making a simple algebraic statement that if you have a random variable,
I'm checking algebra. I'm asking about algebra, not about stochastic.
But there's a symmetry of A3 to minus A3.
Yeah, right.
Summing over both configurations, and then all the odd terms drop out. The sum over all the gauge field.
Yeah, but I am strongly recommend against expanding this thing.
Okay. A3 is just an abelian gauge potential.
So if I take the
trace still would be there, and then in this way to say that cosine of A3 is the same as exponent, no, it's still it's rather some.
It is not more and not less than what you wrote in equation two. Equation two implies equation two star of U, where you put another sigma 3 in there. Another trace, because you would just sum two expressions which goes like e to the minus sigma times s. I mean, this is an algebraic identity. I'm not speaking about anything fancy. So there is nothing, no problem with that. I mean, there's so many other problems where we should be consistent.
I mean, to what extent is equation two being proved, let's say? I mean, you have a certain definition on the left-hand side. On the right-hand side, you claim an area law.
Why?
What goes into that? What sort of approach?
This is the fundamental definition, the Wilson rule for the abelian gauge field.
But you have an equation.
Equation for what?
You say it twiddles something like an area on the right-hand side.
Right-hand side? No, you calculate this operator in the Young-Mills functional with gauge fixing called maximum Laurent gauge. So you get ALTK rule. This is a statement.
Is it based on numerical simulation?
Numerical simulation, yes.
So it's just numerical simulation.
Yes, yeah, on the lattice, numerical simulation.
This is a lattice result.
Yeah, lattice result. So. So I want to give an analytical explanation for this result. This is my motivation of this talk.
Is it bigger or smaller?
Here?
Sigma Abel versus
NA.
Which one is bigger?
No, this is the almost the same. This is called abelian dominance.
Yeah,
this is reproduced at 90% or 95%.
So, but which one is smaller?
Yeah, this is smaller.
Okay.
But some simulation get the larger value than the original string tension.
But physically,
so this is a numerical artifact.
But physically, what would you say?
Yeah, physically, this should be smaller than this, I think. Yes. The one more characteristic feature is the monopole dominance. This implies we can separate this field into the photon part and the monopole part. The monopole part implies we can get the non-zero magnetic charge from this part. If we calculate only this part, using this part for the abelian solution, we'll get the different string tensions as sigma monopole. However, this sigma monopole is almost the same as this body. So, this is almost the same as the original non-abelian string tension expected.
No, but I still can trying to follow in the sense that either you're saying that it's just gauge equivalence, that expression, non-abelian expression in up to fixing gauge is equivalent to A3, or it's not exact same?
This is different. This is get after fixing the gauge.
Right, if any field could be transformed into a abelian field, then the original expression doesn't depend on the gauge, right? Then fixing the gauge by itself should not change the result at all. Then your sigma should be automatically equal, right?
If it's just
equivalence, or you say, or it involves some dynamical assumption.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm just, it's a question.
Isn't the sigma able just a gauge dependent quantity in the way you.
No, yeah. The quantity itself is gauge independent, right?
Sigma at the top is gauge independent, but the thing.
Yeah, anyway, this is a gauge dependent result.
It's gauge dependent.
No,
we cannot guarantee any gauge invariance for this result at this stage.
It's just a method of calculation, right?
You had it right at the beginning that there's a trace in equation one because he's treating it as a full non abelian theory. In equation two, there's no trace because he's fixed a gauge, and then he's treating the degrees of freedom as abelian degrees of freedom, which is an approximation. And he's arguing that it's surprising that this approximation reproduces for the gauge theory so well.
It's more than losing information.
Yeah, I see. So in this way, it's not like automatically the same.
No, it's not automatically the same.
Yeah, so let me go ahead there. So this is so good, but we have a naive question. The RBM projection and the maximum RBM gauge break, this is color symmetric space theory. This is not good for discussing color confinement in general, as a generalization of confinement. And the aberrant dominance has never been observed in gauges other than maximal aberrant gauge, even if they talk to the idea correct. So some people say that this result is a gauge artifact, but we don't think so. And we should discuss how to cure this shortcoming to obtain the gauge invariant dual superconductivity in Yamin theory to realize the dual superconductivities. So for this purpose, we must answer how to extract the aberrant part responsible for co-confinement and how to define the multi-monopole to be contents in Yamin theory. In this talk, it is argued we can separate the original SS gauge potential into two parts. The first part is called the aberrant part. The double quotation implies this is apparently not aberrant, but is essentially aberrant. The reason is explained as follows. And this aberrant part is responsible for co-confinement since the non-aberrant Wilson loop is written in terms of these variables alone using the non-aberrant Stokes theorem. So we can give this variable the special meaning to, from the viewpoint of dual superconductivity for deriving co-confinement. And another part is expected to decouple in the low energy region, leading to the aberrant dominant. This part becomes dominant in the low energy region. So we argue that this decoupling of this degree of freedom coming from the this part gets mass. So this decouple in the low energy region. This comes from the dimension 2 vacuum condensate. This is a mass dimension 1, so this is dimension 2 condensate. But this is gauge invariant. This is a new variable obtained by the nonlinear gauge transformation from the original gauge potential. So let me explain the main part of this talk. You start from the SU2 Yamin theorem written terms of the SU2 gauge potential expressed like this. So we want to obtain another formulation of the Yamin theory written in terms of new variables like this, and this, and this, this. Here, this field plays a very special role. This is called the color field. This is a unit. This has a unit length with three components. This is a realizable notation, and this is a vector notation indicating the three components like this. Then we impose the unit vector properties for this field. The expected role of this color unit field is it plays a role recovering color symmetry. This was lost by the conventional treatment of aberrant projection over maximum aberrant gauge. And at the same time, this carries a topological defect degree of freedom responsible for co-confinement. And so we must give the procedure to obtain this new variable. This should be obtained or given as a function of original gauge potential. So suppose the N, the unit color field, is given as a function of the original gauge potential. This is the rather subtle and is the most important part. This will be discussed later. Then you will write new variable like this. The right-hand side is written by using N and A. And the A, N is obtained from A, so we can write down the right-hand side in terms of the original gauge potential. So this should be identified with the change of variables from the original gauge potential. In the reverse side, we can recover the original gauge potential using this identification. Yeah, V mu, I just before explained, is identified like this. This part is very special, and this part is very important in the following discussions. And the X mu is the other part, identified like this. And this identification was known as the Chou-Fadeff-Niemi-Shabanov decomposition in the previous, so far. However, there are some controversy for the interpretation of this variable. Actually, this decomposition is obtained by solving two equations simultaneously. This color field is specified by the covariant constantness of the background field buoy, On the other hand, X is specified by the orthogonality to L. So we solve this. If we solve this equation simultaneously, we get this expression and this expression. So this is a defining equation for this new variables. However, we have some problems. This is a mismatch for the degree of freedom on both sides of the equations. As you see, consider the d-dimensional SU2 Young middle field. The original gauge potential has 3D components. However, after the, this decomposition, the new variable, NA has two independent degree of freedom, since this has three components and this is a unit length. So this is actually a 2-degree freedom. And this has apparently 3D degree of freedom. However, this is orthogonal to L, so we have minus D degree of freedom, so we actually get the 2D degree of freedom. CMU has D component. This has no gauge index. So we have a 3D plus 2 degree of freedom, 2 extra degree of freedom after this decomposition. So this decomposition is some part misreading. So to get the same theory, same degree of freedom as the original one, we must impose some constraint which eliminate extra 2 degrees of freedom. So we will get the same degree of freedom. This is the problem of this decomposition. Anyway, we can go ahead. If you calculate the field strength according to this identification, we will get this equation. Here, this part coming from the, this is the curvature coming from the V mu part, is reduced to the very special form like this. This is proportional to the n vector, so this has only the component parallel to L. So the magnitude of this gauge potential, curvature, is written like this. So you see, this is exactly the same form as the Taft-Poliakov tensor for the magnetic monopole in the Georgia-Gratiot model. If you identify this neat vector field with the normalized Higgs field in the Georgia-Gratiot model. This is very suggestive for realizing the magnetic monopole in Yamin theory without fundamental scalar field. We have no fundamental scalar field, but instead we have this degree of freedom. But we must give some procedure to obtain this from the original Yamin theory. This is the main point of this bug. So if you regard this as a similar nature as the occurs in the Georgia-Gratiot model, Taft-Poliakov magnetic monopole, we can define the magnetic current like this. The gauge. So we expect this to be a gauge invariant. However, to conclude this quantity is gauge invariant or not, we must specify how this new variable transforms in the under the gauge transformation. This is another problem. So the following issue must be fixed to identify the color unit field with a topological defect such a magnetic monopole responsible for confinement. How n is determined from the original gauge potential? This was assumed so far, so we must achieve this. And the second question, how the mismatch between two set of variables obtained before and after the transformation is solved? We have 2 extra degrees of freedom, so we must give some procedure to eliminate this extra degree of freedom. The third one is the how the gauge transformation of new variable is determined consistently with other issues. So if we can show Nx transforms in the adjoint representation under the gauge group, G mu nu defined in the previous slide becomes gauge invariant, since this is actually exactly the same form as the Taft-Poliakov tensor in the Georgia-Gratiot model. And you see all these problems are simultaneously solved as follows. And this is our new viewpoint for Yamin theory, originally known as the Chopardev Nemishabanov decompositions. We start from the Yamin theory written in terms of gauge potential A with gauge A group SU2, local SU2 gauge group. Then we introduce the unit color vector field L. then we get the larger gauge theory with larger gauge symmetry. Yeah, N is introduced as an independent variable. This has nothing to do with the original gauge potential A. So we have a larger gauge symmetry corresponding to the original gauge field and a newly introduced unit vector field like this. So this theory is actually different from the original Yamin theory. So we impose a constraint to reduce this theory to the gauge theory, which has SU2 gauge symmetry as the same as the original one. So this constraint resolves all the issues raised in the previous trial. This can be calculated using the gauge transformation for the original gauge potential, and the transformation property for the color unit field is given like this. Since this has unit range, so this has only the rotation degree of freedom, so the transformation, the local transformation of this field is specified like the local transformation adjoint rotations. However, this transformation parameter is different in general, since this is, in the beginning, the different independent field from the original gauge potential. This is the state here. So we want to get this, imposing some constraints. So we propose the following procedure, the constraint. This constraint is obtained by minimizing these quantities with respect to the larger gauge symmetries, omega and theta, for the A mu and N. This is equivalent to this expression using the identifications of the variables. Then you can calculate the gauge transformation under the larger gauge transform, so you will get this result. So the integration of this quantity over the spacetime will lead to this result. So the minimization of this quantity here lead to this. So if this is non-zero, you will get this condition from the minimization condition of this functional. This is the desired form of the constraint I explained in the previous slide. This has two conditions, actually. This apparently has three equations, but this is orthogonal to N, following from the orthogonality of X mu to N. This is actually two equations. You see, this is the background gauge for the X mu field in the background V mu. So this is a generalization of the maximal aberrant gauge in the gauge covariant of, or gauge invariant form. For this case, we have no constraint and no conditions, even if we impose the constraint shown in the previous slide. So we have still allow this degree of freedom. This corresponds to the SU2 degree of freedom. So we will get, by imposing this constraint, the another Yamin theory with SU2 gauge group with gauge parameter given right here. So this step is here. We'll enlarge the gauge symmetry and then reduce the gauge symmetry to get the original gauge symmetry. So we can write the generalized constraint condition like this. You see, this differential equation determines the N field, color field, for a given original gauge potential A mu. So we will get the color unit field by solving this equation for the a given gauge potential, original gauge potential. So we resolve the first two issues raised in the previous slide. So our new procedure is different from the old one. The old maximal gauge with the local U1 symmetry, the maximal torus group of the original SU2 gauge group, and the only global U1 gauge symmetry unbroken. However, the SU2 global color symmetry is broken in the conventional treatment. However, in this treatment, we retain the SU2 local symmetry, so also we can preserve the global SU2 color symmetry. The final issue to be solved is the gauge transformation properties. we can calculate the gauge transformations using these identifications variables. Then we set the omega equals theta. Then we get this transformation property. You see, L is the adjoint rotation, obeys the adjoint rotations. Then the X is also obeys the adjoint rotation like this. So you get V mu has the same transfer property with the original gauge potential. Actually, using identification of the A with other field, we'll get the desired transfer property for the original gauge potential. So the field strength is transformed like this using these transformation properties. So this G mu nu, the magnitude of this curvature for obtained from the V mu gauge potential, is the same as the form as we have shown in the previous slide. And this is gauge invariant in this sense. So we resolve the third issue. So we solve this identification, solve all the issues raised in the previous slide. So we can define the gauge invariant magnetic monopole according to these equations. Moreover, the x mu squared is also gauge invariant. This is important for deriving the math for this part. So you can.
You've managed to make this identification of these gauge invariant objects by extending the theory. You now have a master theory with a new gauge. Is it clear that the physical content of this new theory is the same as the original?
Yeah. The enlarged theory is the intermediate step to get the equivalent formulation of the original theory. So you will go and back using the identification of the variables between A mu and L Cx. So if you calculate something written in terms of A in the original Yang mu theory, you can translate this into this theory using a new variable, using a change of variables formula.
Are you really saying it's just a change of variables in the path integral?
So we impose this constraint into the functional integral by introducing the A field and the N field. Then you get this theory. And this theory is related to this using the identification of the new variable given by the transformation rule. Okay.
This is correct classically.
Classically, yes.
But quantum mechanically.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not even sure that your new theory is asymptotically free.
Yeah, asymptotically free, yes.
Maybe it has some abelians in it.
We can check, yes.
Yeah. But the impression is that when you're saying that it's gauge invariant, it's related to the question because it's gauge invariant because you introduce extra variables, right? You have more field and then you have a kind of, additional gauge invariance because you have more field and time to get rid of them back. But then it means that, essentially it's original theory, right? So in this way, this statement that it's invariant in the respect of these added variables. Which are kind of, in a sense, are your variables which were not present in original theory you have, right? I in a sense you have kind of a larger gauge invariance, but this larger gauge invariance refers to this extra degrees of freedom which you are trying to get rid of.
Yes, I know. The usual maximum gauge, the color field is fixed all over the space-time point. However, we recover the color direction at all space-time point by introducing new variable. So this becomes a dynamical variable to express the color direction at every point of space-time. So we can recover the color symmetry in the formulations. In some sense, this change of variable or decomposition is the anatomy of the original gauge potential. So of course, this the correlation function written in terms of new variables cannot be written by the original gauge potential. This is one way. So in this sense, I understand your question. So we can do that. What we can do that is that the if you want to calculate some quantity in the original Yamil theory, written in terms of this gauge potential, is translated to the new formulation of Yamil theory. That's all. Yeah, so quantum mechanically, it's rather difficult to show the truly equivalence of two theories. However, we can check the in the high energy region, the atomic freedom is recovered. And we can get the co-confinement, so we can justify the both region, both end of the momentum regions, infrared and ultraviolet. It's sufficient for us.
You have simple Feynman rules in the new variables?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, you will show us?
Yeah. No, this was shown by the Gies, the other people. Yeah.
Gies. In perturbation theory,
Gies.
When you're going back to,
I don't know.
Yeah.
So, but just the answer. So, if you write the new theory, so you went up, you announced the theory with auxiliary field, you put a constraint, you came down with another theory.
Yeah, yeah.
With in terms of other fields.
Yeah.
In the new Lagrangian, I can make an expansion around the Gaussian field.
Yes. We must impose the just constraint, and we must get the particle determinant if we identify this constraint as a gauge fixing for the larger gauge symmetry. So we must set up the perturbation theory for the new theory by including ghost field, gauge fixing term, Nagai-Slotra field, and we can set up the perturbation theory in this formulation so we can get the one loop correction.
Then I don't give you anything except the final other theory. I don't allow you to go up because otherwise you'll just do you'll do formal manipulations in the past integrals of the same. Anything that is classically right can be proven by passing integral methods if you don't pay attention to Jacobians, which is
yeah. Of course, we can calculate the Jacobians. Yeah. We give them the Jacobian calculation.
No local.
Yes, but
be, the same as each
the simple calculation lead to the non-local Jacobian. However, we can choose more clever variable related to the another x, then the Jacobian can be trivial, the 1, equal to 1. This will relate to the rotation in the color space, the basis rotations. Yeah, this will be explicitly written in our paper's appendix.
But in perturbation series, then you would reproduce the same perturbation series as you started from, right? So because if it would be different, then the theory would be not.
Yeah, we can only check.
So you can have extra variables, but all this extra should cancel out, right? Because I mean, up to
that's what I was worried about. Yeah, I didn't want to get confinement in a theory which doesn't have the same perturbation as the old one.
Yeah.
But this part,
I mean, to the extent that all constraints are there, should be indeed there. I mean, the perturbation series should be one-to-one equivalent.
Yeah, I know. This is some delicate point.
You can always change
some faster results related to this.
No, he put in auxiliary fields, and then you will do the perturbation, then you need to expand around some.
And if you expand me as the same,
in the sentence, it will be clear. So the problem is that you may expand on the singular point of the transformation.
Uh-huh.
It looks kosher classically, but it isn't. I mean, otherwise, you can prove all kinds of supersymmetric theory to be free.
Yeah, okay.
Of
the magnetic charge defined in this way obeys the quantization conditions explicitly calculated like this. This is a very simple calculation. So even if there is no direct singularity into this Abelian-like field simul, we have a magnetic charge subject to the direct quantization condition coming from the N part, the color field parts. For example, we consider the Ouyang type configuration like this. This is a unit vector field. If you will get this field strength for the H, this is coming from the N field alone. Then you get the magnetic monopole sitting at the origin with this magnetic charge. Actually, we can introduce another gauge potential which realize this field strength coming from this N part. And the conventional maximum gauge is obtained in this limit. The color field is fixed at all the space-time points. into the specific direction. So you will get this very simple expression for the d mu nu. However, this is identified as a gauge fixing procedure. So the conventional maximum gauge is obtained as a gauge fixed, a gauge fixing of our formulations. So if we take this, the SE2 local symmetry is broken down to the U1, which is allowed. This is a rotation around the given color unit, around the direction of the fixed color unit vector field. So we want to calculate the Wilson loop average in these formulations. For this, it is rather convenient to use the Noether-Stokes theorem. And this new change variable is suggested also from this theorem. This is the definition of the Noetherian Wilson loop operators. This is rather complicated quantity, since this is the Noetherian gauge potential. This is a matrix. So we must introduce the first ordering procedure to define this quantity. This is rather complicated. We can remove this first ordering by replacing this first ordering with another object. This is the Noether-Stokes theorem obtained by Jakunov and Petrov. And you see this run integral replaced by the surface integral. This surface has the boundary C on which the Wilson loop is defined. And this is already the aberrant quantity, since this has this expression. This is the same as you see in the previous slide. And we have additional field L. This is obtained from the SU2 matrices, like this, using these identifications. And this is a hard measure on the SU2 over U1, expressing a degree of freedom of this new field L. This L could be identified with the color unit field introduced in the previous slide in our formulations. And this is easy to understand. This original form of this theorem was given in another way, but we have given a more simple derivation using the coherent state. Actually, this is a passing integral representation of the Wilson loop operator. Consider this loop operator as a quantum and mechanical operator defined on the one-dimensional closed path. So you can pass integral this quantity inserting the partitioning this loop to some interesting partition point, then introduce a complete set at each partition point. Then you get these quantities by sandwiching this quantity from the both sides by the complete set. The integral for the complete set appears here. This is the origin of this rather specific form of the Noether-Stokes theorem. So there is no ordering procedure in this expression. This is surprising, but it's useful. And this is a surface integral, so this is related to the string sheet. This is the string, and this is the string sheet. So we can derive the string representation using this expression, using these formulations. But we don't talk on this topic in this talk, but yeah, it's possible.
Understand. Does this have anything to do
with the rest? Yeah, originally this has nothing to do with the previous one.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then
this is independent development.
So what is capital U of X? That's the gauge transformation. I mean that's how I define N on this transparency, right?
This N is used to define the spin coherent state to be inserted as a complete set.
What is U?
Use the SU2 element to realize the complete set using making the coherent states, spin coherent states.
We can apply.
Yeah.
Got you.
Okay.
Got you. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes. I understand.
Okay.
But so, let's say we are taking just a billion configuration. Let's say that you take just a billion, right?
A mu. He wants it in the
Let's say that it's only sigma c is there, right? You can. It's for any configuration. This statement.
So I don't understand.
No, I mean, the relation, this Stokes theorem, you can apply to abelian case as well, right?
Yeah, we can apply this theorem to our new formulation.
Yeah, okay, so I'm trying to compare what you are saying to apply to abelian case.
Abelian case?
Yeah, to abelian case.
He so just wants to see the formula simplifying in that.
Yeah, if you'll take a mu, just by, I mean, by hand, to be abelian, okay?
Absolutely.
Yeah, then what I wonder about that, then you have this integration over d mu, right, for abelian case.
Yeah, in the abelian case, this becomes trivial.
No, but it should be normalized to 1 at least.
Yeah.
Because for abelian case, I know that there is a normal Stokes theorem, right?
Yeah.
And there is no there any integration at all, right?
Yeah.
So, but I do not see normalization in your expression because integral over d mu, generically, it's not 1, right? Even for abelian case.
Even for abelian case? What is 1?
You mean because of the 2j plus 1?
No, I mean because d3m, right? You're integrating over d3m and d3m.
No, but look at equation 3.
Yeah. Okay, so you're saying that measure normalized to 1? I do not see. How you see?
Well, there is this 2j plus 1 with Battersby, but other than that.
And because it's up to infinite factor, right? Because integral d3m would be,
No, but any system that is a sphere.
It's sphere, but, okay.
Yeah.
So you should, you mean that it's normalized to 1, right?
Yeah, it is normalized to 1.
Yeah, no, it's what I'm asking, right? Yeah.
But I got confused, but I want to see, but g mu nu is not the billion. It's not d nu, a nu minus d mu, a nu in this. Nx is still a fluctuating variable I have to integrate over. It doesn't come out from the exponent.
Nx will be 1 because essentially you have.
Then what is.
The u commutes to the sigma 3, it's a b. So the nx is.
No, it's an integration variable as well.
And what is. What
n is an integration variable in this formula. I don't understand. What is u? Again, that question. What is u? How is it related to anybody else?
Is it defined by that equation?
Yeah. We get a percentile representation. We must insert the complete set. This state vector must be...
You're answering a sophisticated question, and this is a stupid question. Okay. So, you're given a mu, equation 1.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know what u is. Capital U is...
Capital U is interested to make the state to be inserted as a complete set at the function points.
Is it defined by this equation?
I don't need that equation, right? The equation
is introduced. We rewritten this degree of freedom using new variables n. This is simply identification.
So I don't need that equation.
So you imagine, you can imagine this is U.
Right. So I don't need the equation. If I look at if I cross out the line NA sigma A equals U dagger sigma 3 U, if I cross that line out, it is still well defined.
But this is a simple expression for denoting this degree of freedom. Actually, we don't need all degree of freedom.
I just want to do the integral.
So
then N is an arbitrary unit vector.
Yes. Derived from this unitary matrix, S is matrix.
No, but
it's not.
Now when A is diagonal, it will pick out, because of A has only one component in the three direction, it will just be dotted into N3 there. But there is still a degree of freedom to integrate over. And there's this N.
But
I don't see how you get back there. I'm sorry.
In that case, this is a constant. This
it's
is a constant.
Vector.
So this is no dynamical degree of freedom in the abelian case.
I don't care. I have WC of script A tells me to do this integral, right? So I'm doing the integral, whatever I have. It tells me to do the integral over N1, N2, N3.
But integral for abelian case would be integral over d mu would be equal to 1, right? As we agreed. However, a trace of abelian case is not equal to this exponent.
The N should drop out from the exponent.
Sure, yeah.
But I don't see, do you see how it drops out?
Yeah, no, because if n is along one direction, then all these terms go away because n is orthogonal to A.
Sure.
So what remains is only...
Look at the equation.
Direction.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, okay. No, no, but the non-linear term will go away, right? Because n is a long one direction.
Can I say something?
Right?
No,
yeah,
but n varies.
I think
he
knows that. Listen to that.
I believe what is done here is the following, that you have to take a trace over some matrix space, some linear space, which is of the same dimension as 2j plus 1. Right? That's what you're doing.
Right.
So what he has done is to do the following, namely, take a coherent state representation, which means there is a classical phase space associated with that,
yeah,
which is SU2 module 1. And he writes the trace as an integral over that, thereby introducing n, which is the classical phase
space.
Yeah,
we understand that.
Do
the test.
When you do it for the abelian case,
yes,
you have to actually take j equal to 0, because the dimension of the space, remember that when you quantize SU2, there is a prefactor in the symplectic form, which is proportional to j, and you have to take that to j equal to 0 limit to get a one-dimensional Hilbert space.
Well, that's if you start from the abelian case, but you can also do that SU2 and just take a specific case which happens to be abelian.
That's not right. I can do in any J1.
Yeah.
I mean, a diagonal matrix has a representation even in J equals 115 over 2. It's just lots of...
You can
say
that.
You're saying just restrict to some particular
direction? Yes. J is the representation. I mean, on the trace, there was a little J there upstairs, right, which you didn't write. But that's what the J enters. No, so that can't be the answer.
Yeah, you can take J equal 1/2, say, right?
Yeah.
That's it.
You understand what the question? Do you understand
what
we
the question is just about algebra.
I don't understand.
We want to see. Okay.
Let me discuss privately.
We have plenty of blackboards around the building.
Okay.
Yes. So we can apply this theorem to calculate the Wilson loop average using this function formulas. And then we'll get Mark calculates the average of these quantities with respect to this measure. So we introduce here the constraints I showed in the previous slide, the new conditions. So this expression has another useful form, and this is written like this by introducing the magnetic currents and electric currents and the new quantity defined like this. This has some geometrical meaning. Actually, for the three-dimensional case, this is the magnetic charge density, the zero form, and this quantity is agreeable with the solid angle at x up to the factors. Then you find that this part denotes the rather geometric part. This is the magnetic charge density at x, and this is the solid angle at the same point viewing the surface spanning the Wilson loop. This is S. This boundary is the Wilson loop C. If we consider the ansible point like magnetic charge written in this form, this part implies this part of the Wilson loop operator is written as a sum of the distribution of magnetic charge multiplied by the factor expressing the some geometric mean, the solid angle, at the position of the magnetic charge. This is rather interesting expression. In the four-dimensional case, we can do the similar thing. In this case, this is the four-dimensional solid angle. This is the magnetic monopole current. This is closed, since this has a conserved current. So if we use this simple expression for the magnetic monopole current, this part is written like this, using the Rinking number between the curve and the surface spanning the Wilson loop. So Wilson loop operator can be regarded as a proof of the magnetic monopole defined in these formulations in the Jamian theory. So calculating Wilson loop average leads to the summation of the magnetic monopole charge or current with geometric factor, the solid angles or linking numbers. And We discussed only the gloomy part. However, we want to mention the how the other remaining part plays in this game. We claim that this type of condensation occurs in the Yamil theory. This combination is gauge invariant in the new variables. We have the self-interaction term coming from the Yamil Lagrangian using this variable. And this can be divided into the gauge invariant combination. So if such condensation occurs, we can get the mass term for this degree of freedom, x mu, the remaining part of the gauge potential obtained by the new identifications. And this is gauge invariant, and this is gauge invariant. So this mass term is allowed in this formulation. So this is a rather simple calculation. So more detailed calculation is given in this paper. So this clearly shows that this part can be decoupled in the low energy region. So the Bmu part is dominant in the low energy region, leading to the confinement. This can be identified as the aberrant dominant in these formulations. The dimension 2 condensation have another implications apart from the mass gap problems. Actually, we can show that this Yamil theory in this formulation leads to the Fadeff model. This model has not solitons, and this mass of not soliton is given like this formula. So the XMI condensate become a unit of the global mass if we identify the not soliton with a global. And now we present the lattice formulations. We honestly implemented this idea on the lattice using the new variables. And we generated the color field configurations using this idea on the lattice. And we checked the restoration of color symmetries. And we gave a gauge invariant definition of magnetic monopole, which leads to the continuum form in the naive continuum limits. And then this magnetic charge is subject to the Dirac concentration conditions. And we have checked the magnetic monopole dominant in the spring tensions. And the X component, the other remaining component, have a larger size of a mass, around 1.2 or 3 dB. I'll show you, I'll omit the details of the calculation. And this is the field configuration obtained for the color unit field. This is a three-dimensional slice of the four-dimensional simulations on the lattice. And this is the expectation value of the color field. The single field has binding expectation value for the all the component. This is expected from the color symmetry. And if you calculate the two-point correlators, you see, if A and B is different, this vanishes identically. And if A and B is equal, the all the plot overlap on the same curve like this. 1, 1, 2, 2, 3, 3, give the same curve like this. So this is propagating degree of freedom in this formulation. And this is two color symmetry recovered.
Is this gauge invariant?
Color invariant.
Yeah.
Not gauge invariant.
Okay.
Yeah. This transforms under the gauge transformation in the adjoint representation. So, yeah. Not gauge invariant.
No, but in terms of states you're applying it to, which are color singlets, it doesn't matter because this color invariance, global invariance, doesn't show up for physical states, right?
Right.
Physical states are singlets.
Yeah.
So in a statement that it's not broken for them is kind of trivial, right? Because they are singlets anyway. So when you're saying that it's not broken, it's for objects in your dynamical object which are within your latest simulation, not for final states, not for physical states.
Oh, yeah,
for physical
yeah.
states, it's kind of the statement that SU2 is unbroken, global SU2 is unbroken, has no meaning, right?
Oh, yeah. This is the only four purposes of showing the continuity restoration.
Yeah.
But the lack of gauging variance of the equation, what does it mean? How do you interpret it? If I do a transformation at x and transformation at 0, I don't get cancellation on the right-hand side.
Right-hand side. This part?
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that what the author asked?
Yeah.
So, I mean, how, I don't know how to interpret that equation.
No, this is the color symmetry restoration. Since if A and B are different, this is 0.
But is that a physical result because it's not gauge invariant?
Well, the question is about the local gauge symmetry, not the global one.
Oh, local gauge. I cannot say anything about the local gauge symmetry in this correlation.
It is variance you have lost, although.
No, this is not gauge invariant, so. No, we only check the color symmetry, global.
Did you fix a gauge to generate those data?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We take the Landau gauge for
Landau gauge.
Overall gauge. Yeah. And we must construct the lattice formulation. For this, we must construct the link variable, the compact variable on the lattice. This is constructed as follows. We write the defining equations on the lattice for the ring variables, and the lattice variables correspond to the V mu and the X mu. This is the compact variables. Then we solve this equation, the lattice equation, using this ANDAT. This ANDAT reflects the transformation property expected in the continuum limit. So we'll get for an expression the right-hand side written in terms of the ring variables and the color unit field on the lattice. So to get the unitary matrices, we must normalize this quantity like this. So we get the SU2 matrices written in terms of the ring variables and the original ring variables and the color unit field introduced in this machinery. The X mu is also introduced in a similar way. We'll get this result. This is a free parameter. We can set any value for this. Alpha equal beta is a good choice from the viewpoint of Nabi continuum limits. So we can define the lattice quantity corresponding to d mu nu in the continuum. This is a lattice version of the d mu nu. So we can calculate this quantity and result in monopole current and magnetic charge using this quantity. And we omit the detail. This is the indication of the magnetic charge quantizations using these expressions. And we can calculate the Wilson loop average and the Koch anti-Koch potential. Wilson loop is calculated for the rectangular loop with side length R and T. And using this expression, we extracted the Koch anti-Koch potential. So this is fitted to these functions. So we get the following result. The F, sub-index F, denotes a full Wilson loop, full potential obtained from the original non-abelian Wilson loop. The M implies the result obtained from the magnetic part. This is already appears in the non-abelian Stokes theorem. This is the part. This is a solid angle. This is the magnetic monopole current in the four-dimensional lattice. So you get the, on the larger lattice, the spring tension is nearly the same. This reproduces the 90% of the full spring tensions, even for the magnetic parts defined by this Wilson loop. So you see the Coulomb part is rather small compared to the full potential. Now this value is exactly the same up to the error with the previous result obtained in the naive Max-Mehrabian gauge in this paper. So this is the data. This is the potential fitted according to the equation in the previous slide. derived from the Wilson loop operators, Wilson loop average. And this is the clock anti-clock distance. This is a full string, full clock anti-clock potential. This is the potential obtained from the magnetic part alone. You see clearly this linear potential. However, the slope is a little bit smaller than this. So this string tension reproduces 90% of this full string tension coming from the full Wilson loop. So this shows the magnetic monopole dominance in this formulation, the gauge variable. This is the correlation function for the respective variable, the new variables. You see this variable is the plotted for the V mu and A mu and X mu. You see the X mu is decreased rapidly in the distance region. We can fit this plot with the massive propagators like this. So you see the X mu correlation function is fit extremely good on the straight line. This implies X mu has some mass extracted from the decay rate of these correlation functions. The other correlation function does not show clear fitting, so the mass is not yet specified by these simulations. So you see the mass extracted from this decay will be given like this. So the X mu gluon has mass nearly equal to 1.2 or 1.3. Yeah. And finally, we want to return to the analytical treatment. We obtain this equation as a constant differential form. So we want to solve this equation under some under for the original gauge potential. This implies N is obtained as a function of the original gauge potential. So we can do actually perform this by solving these differential equations. For this, we take the simple ANSATZ for the this ANSATZ, well known. This ANSATZ is very useful since this satisfies the Lorentz gauge and the simultaneously maximal Rabin gauge. So this is very interesting. And actually, the classical solution to the Yamil's equation motion is obtained under this ANSATZ. The special case is the instantons. And this ANSATZ is greatly simplified this equation by this property, then we'll get this equation under this ANSATZ for the original gauge potential. In the three-dimensional case, this Wuyan type monopole of hedgehog is a really a solution of this equation for this type of original gauge potential. These are three dimensions, so the index runs over the 1, 2, 3. Okay. The four-dimensional case is non-trivial. Actually, we must make the functional finite, the N1 functional. So we must choose some configuration for the gauge potential. For example, the simple choice is the one instanton in the singular gauge. This has this asymptotic behaviors. So this clearly implies the finite of this function, the mag functional. However, if we use the one instant in the regular gauge, this leads to the divergent functional. So this is prohibitive. However, if we see the smaller y region, this gives a smaller contribution to the integrand. So the actual situation for getting a smaller f is obtained, for example, like this. In the smaller y region, we have a regular instant. And the outside this region, we have a singular instant. And this will lead to the smaller functional f. So this is some candidate for realizing the.
But the quantity you're discussing is gauge invariant, right?
This is the starting point. Yeah. Then we translate this to the gauge invariant machinery. Yeah. Then using the gauge transformation, this expression is written like this. First, using the fixed color vector, this is equivalent to this. Then you gauge transform this to this. And this expression is obtained from the this expression by the gauge transformation like this. So if we identify n vector with this expression, this is the expression for the n-mag functional, new constraint. So we can obtain the solution using this identification for the inside of the ball, we have this identification according to this. And outside, we have this identification. So this is very simple, since we know that the gauge transformation from the regular instanton to a singular instanton is obtained by this gauge transformation. So in this case, we can write down the n vector using this gauge transformation. Actually, this satisfies the differential equations, the n-mag differential equation. So this is the solution of this. However, this solution does not reach the Manetti monopole loop, even in four dimensions. This is a point-like Hopf effect. The express expression of this unit vector is given like this. You see, this gives a zero of the second order, not the first order zero. This does not correspond to the Manetti monopole in the usual sense I have shown in the first transparencies in this talk. So we want another solution corresponding to the Manetti monopole loop in four dimensions. Actually, we introduce an instanton in the background of the gauge. This solution does not reflect the size information of instanton, and the solution, this solution is a point right. So this is Hopf defect. However, this Hopf defect is somewhat interesting from the different point of view. Actually, we can obtain the model whose equation motion has a solution given by this standard Hopf map. The solution of this model, called Nicol model, is given by the standard Hopf map. This is some specific form, the fractional power. This is necessary to avoid the Derek-Nogo theorem for realizing the topological solution in this model, the 1 plus 3 plus 1 dimension. And recently, another model was derived, which this has a classical solution. The exact classical solution is given by the standard Hopf map. This model has also a very specific form with fractional power. This is also because to avoid the Derek-Nogo theorem. Recently, we are interested in the Fadeff model. Fadeff model is given by this combination with two terms. This is the dimensionless constant, and this is the constant with dimension 2. Since n is dimensionless, this is a four-dimensional model. So this must be four-dimensional in total. Actually, we can show using these formulations, if this constant is identified with this condensation, this Lagrangian can be derived from the original Yang-Mills theory using this formulation. So we expect this Fadeff model can be low-energy effective theory or Yang-Mills theory in some sense. And the solution is very near to the standard Hopf model, the Hopf map. And however, no one has found the exact solution of this model with non-vanishing Hopf charge. But the standard Hopf map is a good approximation for the solution. Recently, the The very special case of Hadamard model was solved exactly in 3 plus 1 dimensions. OK. And I want to conclude my talk. We have given a reformulation of Yamin's theory, written in terms of new variables from a new viewpoint, and constructing the lattice version to perform the numerical simulations to check the monopole dominance in the formulations. And in this formulations, A mu, original Yamin potential, is divided into two parts. The first part is responsible directly for confinement, in the sense that the non-variable loop is written in terms of these variables alone. And we can get the gauge invariant feed strength from this part using this. So we can define magnetic charge gauge invariant way without using the fundamental scalar field in the Yamin theory. And the X mu part is played a different role. And this will decouple in the low energy region by getting the mass. And this will be caused by the dimension 2 constant effect. But this is not confirmed, not yet confirmed. But it is theoretically possible, since this does not break the gauge symmetries. This leads to the passive simulation of infrared average dominance. And we justify all the results obtained the conventional maximum average gauge as a gauge fixed special case of our formulations. So this will open a path for the gauge invariant discussion of dual superconductivity in Yamin theories. And future work, we want to obtain the solution for the magnetic monopole loop in the background gauge in the four-dimensional case. The two instant background is the candidate for generating magnetic monopole loop. The one instanton case is, as I've already shown, in that case we have no magnetic monopole. However, two instanton is desirable for obtaining the boundary monopole loop. And the SU3 extension is another interesting direction for. We have already the formulation ready for numerical simulation. The premier is that already presented the lattice conference. And we recovered the color symmetry, so we can discuss the color confinement on the same footing as the co-confinement based on the dual superconductivity picture. This is a future work expected. And we can discuss the chiral symmetry breaking use this machinery, since we have shown that the X mu acquired mass. So if the quark and the antiquark exchange the X mu gluon, we have effectively four fermion interactions just as the Navier-Narashini model. So we can get the chiral symmetry breaking using this formulations. And finally, we want to mention the stability problem, the vacuum with topological background. We have shown that the magnetic monopole configuration is the classical configuration satisfying the new magnetic constraints, the differential form. However, if we want to calibrate the full Wilson loop average in the analytical way, we must specify how effect comes from the other part, X mu. If we integrate out the X mu field, we'll get some determinant. This determinant will be calculated by solving the eigenvalue equation for these operators. However, the eigenvalue includes some negative value. In that case, determinant becomes negative. So we have instability of the vacuum in this scenario. This is not yet solved in this formulation. Also in the conventional formulation, this is another obstacle to realize the co-confinement analytically based on this formulation. Thank you very much for your attention.
I wonder that, say, if you, it looks like, say, in terms of phenomenology, it's, you're saying that it's kind of a billion type of confinement, right? But a billion type of confinement, it certainly disagrees with phenomenology of known, you know, hadronic states. Because in a billion confinement, you would have much more states than, you know, you would, that would be, it, total charge would be zero. However, those states would be not singlets in terms of non-abelian symmetry. So in this sense, phenomenologically, I would say that abelian confinement is not acceptable.
Not acceptable.
Not acceptable. I mean, just from phenomenology of hadronic states. So if you believe that this X mu kind of massive and decoupled, right, and we are dealing with just abelian, you know, type of confinement, then I would say that we have much more states than we have in the nature.
No, the abelian confinement is some technical, machinery. Yeah, abelian confinement, some technical machinery. We are dealing with no abelian quantity in the whole process.
No, but then at the end of the day, do you have the counting of states the same way as in abelian confinement, or is it is not the case? Because let's say that we have, imagine that we do have kind of, supersymmetric theory of the solution of Zeibeck-Witten type, which gives you abelian confinement, right? Then we can calculate what are states there, and we will see that we will have much more states than we will have. We would need for our phenomenology in hadronic world.
But at least to show the co-confinement, this machinery is good. It's sufficient to show co-confinement.
I think.
Yeah, this is some technical machinery to show co-confinement. This abelian confinement.
So okay, then eventually you said that we can forget about X mu field, right? If it's massive. We are considering some states which are based, technically looks like it is a theory with just abelian confinement, right? And if it's just abelian confinement, then we would have states which with a total charge equals zero. So in this way, criteria is there. However, the number of those states would be much more than, because you can have a state which has kind of the state which has non-trivial total color spin. However, the projection is zero, right? Those states are there, and they are, in terms of abelian confinement, they are okay. However, they are not okay in terms of the states we would like to have, and we do have in the nature. In the nature, we do not have these exotic states. It's kind of, I am repeating the kind of known expression in the literature, it was discussed very much, so it's not I suggesting anything new, but people, saw that abelian type of confinement, if you would apply it would not work for our QCD, for example.
Is that the same issue as the fact that, for a SUN gauge group, you would have N types?
But in the SU3 case, the formulation is not unique. We can, for example, introduce two kind of theories, two kind of formulation to realize this. For the larger gauge, we have many formulations.
But you have independent confinements in N minus 1 abelian subgroups. That's a question. If you do it for SUN, you will have N minus 1 independent channels of confinement.
Independent.
So it means you would have mesons which are made up of red bar and another one for blue bar and another one.
Right.
So if I heat this system up, I will have a degeneracy there for a fact which is bigger than EQCD, for example. Is that correct? That's the question. So you don't see it in SU2 so well, but in it.
After the confinement?
What?
After the confinement, you...
Yeah, after the inner confinement, you heat it up, you want to deconfine, and the degeneracy of the mesons matters.
Yeah, you would have much more mesons than we have in the nature.
But I cannot answer the question. If you increase the temperature, the symmetry is different. Yeah?
No, you don't need temperature. You just look at the spectrum of mesons at zero temperature, and you'll see the degeneracy.
That's about exactly.
No, you formulate this very well, that you have, say, U and TU and D and TD and S and TS, and they are separate, right? Each of these combinations is confined in abelian sense, right? However, what we have in the nature, it is UU plus DD plus SS, only this combination, right? I mean, UU, I mean, not at all of color. I mean, I'm just in alien, right?
No, no, no. This variant is confirmed, is not the same as the conventional variant.
Doesn't matter, but you have n minus 1 of them. You have more of this. In SUN,
yeah?
You have force carriers, which are abelian, which confine, and they are independent.
No, they're not independent, because in this formula we have the full SUN gauge invariance, right? So they can't be independent. They have to be
so I'm asking how many U1s are left. I don't know. So how many U1s are left?
Not important. How many UI is not important?
Yeah. No. I see.
Okay. Yeah. We can make several formulations for the larger.
The number of UIs changes for
Yeah.
There's one way of formulating.
So we'll get finally, I expect that we'll finally get the same result independent of the number of U1 factors. So the confined must occur in the gauge invariant way.
So there will be only one U1 that is confined, confining at the end. Only one U1.
Only one sufficient. Even in a larger gauge group, I think.
The ratio of this magnetic spring tension and the full spring tension will depend on n. I mean, so do you know if for SU3 it's smaller than SU2 or it's bigger?
Yeah, I don't know. I know.
Q was going to say something.
Well, I just wondered whether you found using your various variables a gauge invariant way of effectively defining a mu, a mu, which you've then given an expectation value to proportional to lambda squared, and that this in a Wilson loop is effectively generating the area law.
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
I mean, you've introduced this unusual way of doing gauge fixing, and in the end, you effectively define something which is like a mu, but in a gauge invariant sort of way, as a dimension two object, and that this you've given a expectation value to, presumably proportional to lambda squared, is dimension two. Mm-hmm. And that in a Wilson loop, that this generates effectively the area law.
Give you a perimeter law?
Sorry?
Wouldn't it give a perimeter law? Just a sort of self-energy?
Well, it's like a sort of mass term. I mean, it's but something it which will give a correlation across the Wilson loop.
But it was a mass term for X mu.
X mu is sort of related to A mu. But let's forget about it. Let's just suppose you define A mu, which other people have tried to do in a gauge invariant style way. In general, it becomes non-local.
Yeah.
But there are some gauges in which it's local. And that you're giving this some kind of expectation proportional to the lambda squared.
Yeah.
And that in some sense, this is generating the scale in the Wilson loop.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Which gives you the area law.
Yeah, this last step, I don't understand. I mean,
but I'm not saying I really understand it, but nevertheless, this is my way of interpreting what you've done.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yes. Yeah. But the mu square is not gauging bound in the usual way. So,
no, I understand.
So if we fix the gauge, yes, AB can have a non bound extension bearing. Yeah. So dimension 2 condensate has a. Some interest in the recent investigations. So many people have studied the dimension 2 condensate in the fixed gauge. They obtained the some non-zero value even on the lattice simulations. So, yeah, we expect the similar situation can occur in this.
But you've defined a dimension 2 condensate as well.
Yes, but in the gauging value way, using a new value.
Sure,
way.
Sure.
When you simulate your, so you've changed variables in the path integral and now you have a kind of discretized version which you're simulating, right?
Yeah.
So for that kind of new version, the key question is it really the same as the old version? Have you tested the existence of the continuum limit and looked at asymptotic freedom that way by, you know, really trying to go to small coupling and seeing, you know, you get the same behavior as the continuum limit of the original path integral?
I would never do that. It's expected, since this essentially gives the gauge invariant description of the conventional maximum gauge. In the maximum gauge, the ARO is shown for the all coupling, which is on the asymptotic scaling. agree
so
with
the approach to the continuum
scaling
with
need.
New variables if you
no, no, but you're asking about ultraviolet, right?
Yes.
Because you are considering this as dynamics in infrared, and I believe that what Nick is asking is about ultraviolet, whether you would reproduce, you know, behavior at short distances.
Yeah, but we have some limitation of numerical calculations.
Well, you're still quite small. So, more limited than in the original variables? I mean, you should still be able to see some kind of scaling that indicates the onset of continuum behavior, right? I mean, so you have two different formulations, and you really want to believe that they're the same.
Well, you want to know they're the same theory.
So, I mean, on the lattice, you would look for the continuum limit, and that would be the indication that it's
insane. I guess the answer is computing time is finite. I mean, he's got results on quite small systems, and a lot of work needs to be done, I would guess.
Yeah.
But you did mention that asymptotic freedom is somehow has been checked in the continuum perturbatively by
using
that
the
somehow follows just from the
analytical
perturbative change of variables, right? But that's not entirely convincing.
Yeah, I mentioned the one-loop analytical calculations. Of course, we can do the similar thing on the lattice, but I have never I've never done it, so I'm sorry.
I think we have much to ponder, but let's do it over lunch.
Thank you very much.